Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is Monday, September 26th, and we are live with our Decent Crypto Recap. I'm here with Matthew Blumberg. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm enjoying. I'm heading out to Singapore later today. Got a 20-hour flight. If anyone has any recommendations on how to survive such an ordeal, let me know. What do I bring for reading material? What do you think?
Well, for listening material, I can recommend 7 episodes of The Merge, you know, in case you want a recap, in case of a preview and a recap.
That gets me less than halfway there. We need another Merge.
I'm reading this book right now. It's called The War of Art. It's a very good book.
The War of Art.
Mm. Yes. Talks about getting through resistance. Very nice. I like it. So also, if anyone's going to be at Token 2049, hit Matt up. He loves to meet people.
Yes, I do.
Yes. All right. Let's get into it, Matt. It's been a not that busy week, but some fun things happened. Some not so fun things happened, depending on which side of the table you sit on. Let's go, dude. This morning, Interpol is getting involved in the Doquan situation.
So, are they going to make him eat bugs? Like, what does the international community want from this man?
It starts, you know, actually, now that you think about it, Doquan is the poster child of what the World Economic Forum wants for the future. You will own nothing and you will be happy. They're starting with Doquan. They're making an example out of this man. They're gonna strip him of everything.
Yeah. And dude, three arrows as well, right? Like, they took away the yacht. Much wow.
I think that was maybe their fault. You know, maybe you don't want to take loans from the mob. That's probably inadvisable at this stage. So last recap,
you know,
we talked
about the meme where it's like, sorry, just on three hours. You know, the meme where it's like, I need a token that's going to do a 10x with 100% certainty over the next 72 hours. Like, what do I do? Little did we know. Yeah. Also, it's because they owe the mob.
Look, man, it's tough. It's a tough situation when you got to pay people that will go for your neck, you know? Where do you think they are? Now that we're on this tangent, where do you think they are? Where in the world?
Kyle and Sue?
Yeah. And the wife.
Why would they have left Singapore?
Is Singapore a safe place? Do you think they were ever in Singapore?
It's a very safe country. They were never in, like, Dubai, right? Like, that was what
they said they were going to Dubai.
Yeah, but the authorities there said that they've not arrived.
They're not, actually, yeah. So you think still Singapore?
I mean, Singapore seems like a place that can keep track of the number of people there, like, really, really easily. So I don't know, you know. I also don't know why you would leave Singapore, right? Like, it's a country with, like, fairly good, you know, fairly strong legal system, like, you know, relatively, like, business-friendly. Like, it seems like just as good a place as any. Like, that used to be Hong Kong, but no longer, right? I think Singapore is probably where you stay. I don't know, like, they've got homes there. Like, where else are they gonna go? You know, like, you're not gonna go to the US, you're not gonna go to China, you're not gonna go to Europe. Maybe they're in Europe, maybe they're in London. Seems like a pretty friendly place toward people that have assets from questionable sources.
Yes, London is where you go.
What if they're on Mars?
Like,
what if we reveal in 18 months, like, when Mars has, like, made its closest pass or whatever, like what if, you know, how, like, we have all these Mars, like, rovers, and, like, like, what if one of the Mars rovers stumbles across Kyle and Sue, like, smoking weed in, like, a Mars outpost, like, like, with, like, 6 Bloomberg screens up, and, like, it's like their Bloomberg rep is, like, the one guy that covers extra Earth, like, extra planetary systems.
Yo, what? those are the only messages coming from the Mars little, like, base they have. It's just like, yo, what, over and over.
Yo, what? Yeah. Over and over again. Like authorities have detected, like, a repeating signal coming from the Martian system. Is there life on Mars?
There must be life on Mars. So, okay, let's get into another man who's on the run, Mr. Do Kwon. So,
not on the run, as he would say.
Oh, yeah, true. Cooperating, as he would say.
Cooperating, yeah.
But last week we talked about how he's now facing charges under South Korean law. Five charges, I think, of breaking their capital markets law in South Korea. So, yeah, in relation to Terra. Now I guess he's on the run. They claimed last week that he was on the run. He said he was not on the run. He said he is cooperating. And as of this morning, it came out that Interpol has issued a red notice for Do Kwon, which basically means that he can be arrested anywhere in the world. I saw the headlines and it was like, there's a worldwide arrest warrant for Do Kwon. I was like, I didn't even know that was a real thing. Like, I didn't know you could have a worldwide
Red Notice.
I did read Red Notice, but even in Red Notice, there are certain jurisdictions where like you're, you know, Interpol doesn't, like play, you know? So,
yeah.
I just figured that, you know, he's probably going to one of those places. Maybe all these guys are going to Saudi, you know? I think Saudi would welcome them.
Saudi cooperate with red notices though? I
have no idea. You would think so? Really?
Yeah. Just cause there's strong ties with the US. I feel like they might have to.
Maybe.
I mean, you don't really want to, like, if there's one thing I know for sure about crypto, it's that you don't really want to wind up the subject of a red notice. Few rules. This wasn't the white paper, actually. This isn't the Bitcoin white paper. It's like, you know, if you guys, nobody reads the technical appendix, but.
As always, dude, Kobe put it best. He was like, the main goal of crypto is to not become the main character. And Do Kwon did basically everything he could to become the main character.
He sure did.
And I mean, look, they're going to try and make a mockery out of this guy, make an example out of this guy because of how many. This is like what you want to avoid as a regulator is retail investors getting screwed over. Now, the thing that I want to talk about with you is whether or to what extent Do Kwon himself and the founders and the, you know, creators of Luna and you know, the Taro ecosystem, you know, including Anchor, like should be criminalized, right? Like to what level do you think they not only deserve blame, but deserve to, you know, yeah, like literally just be criminalized, right?
Yeah. Look, I mean, my take on this, and I think we're probably going to have pretty similar takes, is that zero, right? Like, that this is not, like, unless they did something behind the scenes that, like, we don't know about. Like, if, for example, like, there's all these allegations from this Twitter account, FatManTerra, who is not doxxed and does not reveal any sources or evidence to support their claims. But the account keeps tweeting things like Do Kwon was siphoning tens of millions of dollars off per month, or like Terraform Labs like stole $1 gazillion worth of Bitcoin or whatever. And like, I agree that like the transparency there could have been substantially better and still is, you know, we're missing some facts, right? But the only thing that they should be criminalized for would be something that we haven't seen so far. We don't know about, right?
The one thing that I've seen come up over and over is the fact that Do Kwon, like through his tweets and through just like the stuff that he was saying, it was misleading investors or potential investors, basically making arguments that this thing was safer than it was, or yeah, basically, yeah, like misleading investors, which. If you watch that interview, the like one interview that he did, you know, the interviewer does a pretty good job of kind of like cornering him into that, where he's like, well, what do you classify as fraud? And then he gives his own definition. And then he's like, well, according to these things that you said in the past, like, wouldn't that basically just be fraud? And there's a good argument to be made that yes, that, you know, you could say it was fraud, but,
I mean, if you look at like, okay, so, if you think about stocks, right, the onus is on the buyer to do their own research, right? Like in crypto, the onus is on the buyer to do their own research. And mm-hmm. if you go to like the actual research portal for Terra, the research page, right, where like people were posting analyses, it was very clear that like this was not a riskless investment, right? In my opinion, the people that are much more culpable of that would be the ones that were starting these like, you know, Web 2.0 style like neo banks, where they were taking depositors' investments, putting it into Anchor, right? Promising 10% APY, and then they would like take the other 10% for themselves. That to me is like substantially more harmful than anything that like the founders of Terra or Luna did, right? Like you could equally say that like, like the founders of any kind of meme coin that inherently has no value, right? Or Bitcoin for that matter, that could go to zero. You could hold them liable if it does go to zero. Like just because something doesn't work out doesn't mean it becomes a crime, right? And it was clear from like a lot of the analysis, like if you actually did your research, you knew that there were risks involved. Right. It wasn't like a sure thing. There's no such thing as a sure thing, especially in this world of like social consensus coins. Right. As we've discussed before, I don't think it was a sure thing that it was going to fail, but I don't think it was a sure thing that it was going to succeed either. For example, one question that I could see coming up is like calling something a stable coin. Is that fraud if it's not stable? Right. Like mm-hmm. USDT is a stable coin. Sometimes it sells off, right? A little bit. It's not stable, right? Like, does that make it fraud to call it a stable coin? USDC sometimes trades at $1.01. Sometimes it trades at 0.99. You know, that's not stable, right? Mm. So, you know, obviously like going to zero makes it much less stable, but like, is the word stable coin as a label enough to make something fraud if it's like algorithmically generated? Like is DAI a stable coin?
Right. Yeah, but I mean, has DAI ever claimed to be a stable coin, or it's an algorithmic stable coin. Yeah, that's true. But has it like claimed to investors that it will always, you know, I guess like where is it legally bound, I guess, to be stable? One-to-one?
Was UST like no, right?
No, it
like,
definitely was not. And I don't think that's the claim.
Here. Currency that you control. Generate DAI on your terms instantly. One DAI equals $1. Direct is about equal to $1 is maybe the key operator there. That's like straight from their website, right?
Sure.
You know, I'm sure everyone's rethinking, like, can I call something a stable coin now?
Yeah.
Frax, right?
Yeah.
Look, I heard a really, really shitty analysis of this back when this all first happened. And I would say that like that really heavily impacts my perspective here. So there's a guy, his first name is Matt. He does the Decrypt, the Decrypt Daily, Matthew Diemer. You can email him matthewdiemer@decrypt.co. He gave this take of like when Luna 2.0 was being announced, right? He was like, when are we going to stop this from happening? Why aren't we stopping this man from doing this again? How many people have to get harmed before we can stop this? It's like, dude, like this is like fully permissionless. Like you can't stop anyone from doing anything, right? Like you can stop centralized exchanges from listing it, right? But the whole point of these systems is like you can permissionlessly do things, right?
So here's my thing. I don't have an issue with any of that. I think as many Lunas as you want should be able to exist. You can make the same argument about any Bitcoin fork or any ETH fork or any fork of anything, any new protocol that comes up. Like, why invent anything, right? Why try anything in the world, right? My issue, the only one argument I can see for why Do Kwon should be criminalized is if he misled investors and like how you classify misleading people, right? Like by saying that like we have this Bitcoin reserve that we're going to deploy to like, you know, maintain the peg or whatever. And like that led more people to come in and actually support it and then lose all of their money. And we don't know when they bought the, when they use that Bitcoin to support it, or like whatever, right? Like you said in the very beginning, there are a lot of facts that we don't know about. And through his statements, through his interviews, his tweets, like he really made it sound over time like it was a much more sure kind of investment than it was. And whether you want to criminalize something like that, now, if this was a security, if this was a stock, like you said, he would be criminalized, like you saw with Elon Musk, right? This is not a security, at least for now. So, you know, that's an open question. But that's the only angle I can see where, you know, you can make a, you know, like legal criminal argument towards somebody like this as a precedent. For the future, right? Where, you know, trying something, making a piece of technology that other people can use, I don't think that's a, you know, nothing like that. Like we had the same argument with Tornado Cash. I think it's a very, very one-to-one kind of parallel. You know, like there are differences, obviously, but it's technology in the end. Like this is much more of a monetary technology, like a monetary experiment, I would say. But it's still a technology. The difference is that if you are encouraging people to make investment decisions based on information that you're not sharing, or misinformation. Yeah. So those kinds of things.
Yeah, I would ask one question just following up on that, which is like, you know, you have a lot of people that will say things like on Twitter, like Bitcoin is going to $1 million, right? Mm-hmm. To what degree are we going to classify them as also committing fraud? And like, obviously it's a spectrum. These people aren't the leaders of Bitcoin, right? Like they're not
so exactly
clearly, right? That's the big difference. Like having control.
Yeah. They're not the CEO of Bitcoin. They're not the CEO of Bitcoin the way Do Kwon is the CEO of Terraform Labs. Right.
He was CEO of Terraform Labs, right? But like we do have CEOs of say Consensus, right? Like to what degree are they going to be held responsible for saying that like Ethereum is going to be the future settlement layer if like it doesn't work out that way? You know, like Terraform Labs is different from the protocol. Like, you know, in a very nuanced way. It's a centralized company, right? Like if he had said you should buy equity in Terraform Labs because Luna is going to ensure that like the price of UST is always $1, that mm-hmm. would be like fraud, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like a protocol with like a commodity token, like there's a reason it's not a security, right?
Yeah. I guess we need to look into it. Like, you know, like Do Kwon has definitely said stuff like, you know, this thing is not going to collapse and like, you know, it's going to destroy DAI. It's going to be, you know, it's going to like take over, like all this kind of stuff, right? I don't know if, you know,
Michael Saylor brings this point up, right? He's like, You'll never ever see me say anything about buying the stock of MicroStrategy, mm-hmm. right? Because I can't legally do that. And there's a reason for that, right? Mm-hmm. But I can tweet anything I want about Bitcoin because it's a commodity.
Mm-hmm. So similarly, Bitcoin and ETH, they've been clearly identified as like decentralized, sufficiently decentralized to not be securities.
I guess is centralization risk, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like the other example that I would point to that's maybe a little closer to Do Kwon on the spectrum is Aave. So if Aave were to fail, are we going to start issuing red notices for Stani?
Yeah. I mean, I would hope not.
I mean, obviously it's not as brazen, right? As like, look, I'm not arguing like, there's a reasonable point to be made that like Do Kwon through his like tweets and perceived leadership of this project, mm-hmm. like does sort of flirt with the classification of fraud, right? Or misleading investors.
Here's the thing. I'm not trying to make an argument one way or the other. I'm saying the only kind of like holes I can see here are like, look, if this guy was saying Anchor is 100% safe, put your money in Anchor. UST is 100% safe, put your money in UST. And then as it's like going down, he's saying, oh, we're going to, you know, whatever, deploy more capital towards this. And then they didn't end up doing that, right? Those kinds of things, clearly that's criminal activity.
Right.
Other than that, I don't really see, you know, like the rest of it, like you said, like inventing a protocol, like, you know, similar to Aave or to whatever, like all of those things are, that's just, you know, I don't know, entrepreneurship.
So there's the inventing the protocol, and then there's like tweeting that it's safe
and like pumping right? its bags. Yeah, exactly.
Which is something that Stani's definitely more careful about, but like, there's definitely the perception that like he thinks it's safer. He's working to make it safe. Right.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, he wouldn't be working on it otherwise. Right. Like I would hope he believes in his own product.
But no, I agree. Like if Doquan said, look, Terraform Labs is going to do X, Y, Z to defend UST. And like, they didn't, which like very unclear what they did exactly. Right. They said something about lending their BTC to market makers to like, you know, the details there, like the transparency leaves a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. And so it's unclear, right? Like, but yeah, that seems like a reasonable hole. Like if that's how it went down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Singapore and South Korea don't have an extradition treaty. So right. if he is in Singapore, South Korea has already motioned to cancel his passport. And so the only way that he'll be like allowed outside of the country, without like, it would, there's two things, right? Like there's either he somehow gets through Singaporean customs or gets into an embassy in Singapore, similar to like Snowden style, right? Where like he is able to sort of get out, exit the traditional, you know, international, travel system. He winds up like going to South Korea. It's like really the only country within the traditional international travel system that will be able to reclaim him. He's, you know, if he is in Singapore, he's stuck in Singapore.
He's stuck for life.
Yeah. Now Doquan has said that like he is cooperating, right? So it's worth noting that, right? Like, whereas like Kyle and Sue were just completely silent, right? They didn't even say that. Now Doquan, obviously he's a little further out on the risk spectrum in general. So he's going to be comfy saying a lot of things, right?
When this red notice came about, South Korea or like some spokesman said that they take issue with the fact that he's said he's cooperating. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah.
Questionable.
Who knows? It'll be super interesting to see the developments here. And I think we're just going to see a lot more Anon teams.
Really? I think for these kinds of experiments. Yeah.
I mean, look at Satoshi, right? Like there's a lot of like Satoshi is a much safer person or group of people because of that pseudonymity.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah.
They can't as easily like monetize their creation. So there's that, right? But I just think like it sucks, right? Because like you want people to be like, you know, comfortable enough with the quality of their project that they don't feel the need to develop anonymously. But if you and you know, it's harder as a backer of a project to back one with a fully anonymous team, right?
This is the thing that I want to see is what they actually charge him with. And, you know, if it's stuff that is very easily avoidable, like just don't like mislead people about like what you did with the Bitcoin or like don't tweet like wild shit about like Anchor is 100% safe. I don't even know if he did that. I don't even know like what they're accusing him of. As of yet, I don't think anybody does. I don't think
they said violating their financial laws.
Yeah. So that is the thing that I want to see. And I just would love to see all the facts come out before.
Yeah.
We judge.
I mean, we don't want a witch hunt, right? Just like, you know, you can't like, what I don't want to see is Doquan getting arrested because Luna went to zero.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, if he's guilty of anything, I'd like it to be like you were saying, like something that clearly is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about a couple more, you know, speaking unfortunate
clearly,
events.
Speaking of clearly avoidable. Ooh, painful,
yeah, dude.
Man.
I think I might just go on mute for about the next 15 minutes while you talk about vanity addresses and how dumb winter mute is.
You're going to go mute or winter mute?
Hey, there we go.
Dude, rough one, this one. Tough reading about it because you can see how I'm like, oh man, now that totally could have happened to me. Like, I mean, I think if I were running one of the world's largest crypto market makers, it wouldn't have happened to me. I would have would have been a little more careful than I usually am. But okay, vanity addresses. Let's take just like a quick step back. You want to cover the basics?
Oh, I was going to let you take the step back and cover the basics. I'll
take the step back and cover the basics. So a vanity address is one that starts with like a sequence of characters that people are like, that they find interesting or fun or desirable for some reason. So
or like related to, if you run a company, like related to your company.
Yeah. Like that. I might want one that is like 0x Matt, something, you know, and then like 60 other characters. Right. You can do this for fun or profit, right? So you can do it for profit because the more leading zeros you have at the start of an address, you actually do save a little bit of gas when that data gets written up to the chain. And so you see this a lot with like MEV bots or like MEV strategy runners. It's a race to the bottom in terms of gas consumption for them. They're always trying to figure out like the most gas efficient way to execute something because it allows them to get to bid a little bit lower for the next block than their competitors. So Wintermute used an address like a lot of times, or there are a couple of addresses involved here, but basically their goal was to get these addresses to have as many leading zeros at the start as possible, because that will save you quite a bit of gas, and in the long run that can pay itself back, right? So you use a tool, and there's one called Vanity that was used in this case, and let's walk through like generally how Vanity would work, right? You have your private key, right? And you use some entropy to generate like the first like half of it, right?
Okay.
And then
you just by entropy you just mean like you need to generate like random words or some kind of randomness.
Yeah, some kind of randomness. Yeah, you can move it. And this can be anything from moving your mouse randomly or pseudo-randomly, right? It can be like a photo of like there's a company that operates like a wall of lava lamps that you can actually use as a verifiable randomness generator.
I've seen like people roll out 64 dice and like take a photo of that.
Love that. Effectively, like you just need some kind of random thing. And then you start with that random thing and then you like digit by digit, sort of like change it a little bit. And each time you change it, you check if the public key, if that private key maps to a public key that has whatever property you're looking for. So it starts with a certain number of zeros or it starts with Matt or whatever. Right. And you just keep kind of like iterating either randomly or like, you know, consecutively. So maybe you generate like the first half randomly and then you start from 0 and then you go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera, all the way to like till the last one's full of 9s. And if that doesn't work, you do it again, right? So Wintermute was using a library to execute this called Profanity, which is a fun fun name for a library. There was actually a compromise in Profanity, right?
Okay.
This was revealed a few weeks back. I want to say it was the 1inch team that discovered it. And they posted a notice like, yo, guys, because it takes time, even though, like, I want to say the exploit was something like it wasn't using as long of entropy as it should have been. So maybe, you know, in our previous example, you have half your private key and you generate those digits randomly. Maybe instead it was actually only generating like the first 3 randomly and then iterating consecutively through the rest.
I see. Okay. Just to kind of become more efficient.
No, it's just like somebody typed the wrong number, right? How many digits should get generated randomly. Yeah. It was a bug. Yeah. You can imagine like if you're trying, let's say you, Kron, are trying to generate an address that starts with 0xLOL. Okay. And then you don't care about like whatever the rest of the digits are like, or whatever. Usually you would have like 32 digits that like you can start with, and you generate those randomly. And then you go consecutively from there. So you have your like 1 through 32 and then it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, blah, blah, blah. And you just sort of increment that by one, a little bit like a nonce for mining, right?
Right.
So the issue is that like, so as an attacker, right, in order to get to, in order to figure out what your private key is, I have to follow the same path that you did, basically, right? And so in this case, I would have to first guess or like go through every possible sequence of the, that first half that got generated randomly. And then start incrementing sequentially. You can imagine like that would be impossible, right? Like it's impossible for me to guess where you started randomly.
Right.
So that's what leaves it as secure, right?
Mm.
But if you have say one digit that's chosen randomly and then the rest get iterated sequentially, right? I can just try, you know, now I only have to do the search 10 times, right?
Okay.
Figure out where we wound up, and it becomes tractable mathematically. It becomes feasible to do it in a finite amount of time. And if you have $160 million sitting around, like maybe I have that much resources at my disposal to do it. So that was does that make sense? That was kind of the core issue of the profanity, like vulnerability.
Yeah.
It wasn't using as much entropy as it should have been.
Okay, and the reason that happened, it was literally just a little bug. It didn't require the okay.
Now profanity support is no longer there, right? It was not supported anymore by the community or by the project founders. And so, generally speaking, as like best practices, you should be monitoring that like your private public key generator software is actively being supported, or is being generated on hardware. Right. Mm. So when it comes to public private key generation, right, you want to be obviously extremely careful about this. Right. This is why ledgers are actually super valuable, is they have a secure chip that's purpose built to do this entropy step to generate your seed phrase in a very safe manner. So the ledger itself is never connected to the internet. And this part of the chip that generates that and holds on to it, the part that manages the actual seed phrase, never touches the part that like connects the internet. It can only be delivered messages to sign and deliver the sign message, and like physically it's constrained from doing anything else.
Right? Okay. And so it's basically a single purpose chip just to create randomness and like generate these addresses.
Generate seed phrases, right? So if you think about MetaMask, this is somewhat dangerous. And this is why Ledger does not recommend importing seed phrases from MetaMask that were generated with MetaMask. Because imagine you have your computer and you go to some like sketchy website, or you like, well, I mean, we would never connect our wallets to a sketchy website. You install some, you know, free VPN software, or you do something that you have to like type in your password to get. Now that software might have admin access to your computer. So when you install MetaMask, it might actually detect that and overwrite like the randomness bytes with like some bytes that like it decides. So it might overwrite this like randomness part. And so this is why it's best practice never to generate a seed phrase or a private key from a device that's ever been connected to the internet.
This is what people talk about when they mention like air gapping.
So brand new laptop or literally throwing dice is like, I love that. That's great. Because it's physical randomness that can't be controlled or spoofed or hacked. Right. That's why like MetaMask seed phrases, like generally speaking, if your software is up to date and your computer is up to date, like that might be good enough for someone that's got an ETH or two, like sitting in their computer. But even then, look at Slope Wallet, right? Like the reason Slope Wallet was able to send private keys in the first place in the logs, like back to its server when this hack happened or was revealed like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
The reason for that is these were seed phrases that had been entered or exited into Slope Wallet. And there was some kind of like, you know, there could have been some kind of exploit at that
right.
step.
So right. If you had not used the Slope Wallet, like, you know, their infrastructure, their servers, it's never an issue there, right?
Yeah. So if you use this like safe best practice of generating that entropy through a secure manner, and then you never entered that into Slope Wallet, then that would have been fine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, now the issue is like, well, you have to sign somehow. And that's what the hardware wallet is supposed to do for you. It generates in a secure way, this private key or the seed phrase, right? That in turn generates all your private keys. And it also can sign shit for you. So it holds onto that seed phrase in a place, a special built place in the hardware that all it can do is sign, right? All it can do is sign when asked to. As opposed to the slope wallet, the issue is you could generate your seed phrase wherever, but if you enter it in the slope wallet, now slope wallet's holding onto it and it's logging it and it's sending those logs to its servers where you're at risk, right? So here's the a quick aside. Here's the exact opposite of that. Give me 2 seconds, but I think this is like super instructive.
Yeah. So getting back to Wintermute. They lost $160 million in this unfortunate little situation of theirs. The funniest part to me was that they basically told the hacker, hey, return the money or face legal action.
Real quick, backing up.
What are you showing us?
I got this at a conference the other day.
Nice. What is that?
In the tote bag. Yeah, a valet. Now, this is what you could call probably the worst practice for private key management. Look at what it says. It says, to reveal the public deposit address, just open the tab above along the dotted lines. Now, here's why that's an issue. It means that, like, this private key was generated God knows how. It could have been placed into this device well ahead of time by someone who was malicious, right? It's probably in some database somewhere under the reason for that private keys.
The reason for that is the public key already exists and is available on display on this cardboard box. To be able to do that, you have to have already used that seed phrase to generate the private key and then generate the public key.
Bingo. Here's the public key if you guys want to send me any Bitcoin to test it out.
None of our listeners have Bitcoin.
Nobody who has Bitcoin sends it. No one's sending value on Bitcoin. The thing is, right? Like, let's get into like, so first Wintermute, they use this tool. It doesn't generate the entropy correctly. And as a result, the hacker is able to dedicate a bunch of resources to trying to iteratively try a whole bunch of private keys until they get one that matches the public key, right? We're caught up so far. Now let me break it down. There's 2 addresses that were involved here, right? There's Wintermute's hot wallet, and then they have like a vault wallet, right? They correctly actually saw that this exploit was possible and removed all the ETH from their hot wallet. Not bad, right? If only just to make themselves a less desirable target. But what they forgot was that the Vault wallet has a set of admins, and their hot wallet was an admin for the Vault. And so all they needed was that hot wallet's key or private key in order to like release the assets that are in the Vault. So that was, and look, the Vault may have been generated with some other, you know, software that like they thought they were good. They moved all the ETH out of the compromised one, and the other one is good. But the issue is that they forgot that like the compromised one actually had control over the other one to begin with. So they lost about $160 million worth of assets, mostly stables. Interestingly, do you know what they did with the stables?
Like just in general, or did like
the attacker,
the hacker? Yeah. No idea.
They deposited them into the Curve pool.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Wow. Because otherwise Circle could freeze the USDC and that address. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they deposited all of the stables into the Curve pool, and now they have
very smart
LP tokens. Circle can't just freeze the Curve pool. Right.
Yeah.
Because if they did that, like Curve would crash and burn, right? Or chaos. Chaos in the streets, I'm telling you.
So is this a bet? Is this almost like a way of like mixing the coins? Like getting other stables as well?
I would say it's not really mixing, right? Because you still have like a clear chain of ownership on these like 3CRV like LP tokens, right? There's still like, you know, it's not being like mixed at all. You can still trace
it's not, the chain custody,
right? Right. But it is a way of making it so they can't get locked.
Okay. Okay.
Now, interestingly, they didn't swap for ETH.
So that's what I was going to say. Why would they not just swap for either ETH or, I don't know, USDT or DAI or whatever?
I have no idea. But this is what they chose to do. And you know, a lot of people are speculating that that this is like what happens in a post-Tornado Cash world.
Yeah, they just want to become too big to fail, I guess, in this.
I mean,
you know, like depositing $160 million, it's a curve, is substantial.
Too big to fail. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you take me down, the whole ship's going down. Yeah,
exactly.
One reason I can speculate that they might have kept the stables in stables is so that they can sort of work out like a white hat payment with Wintermute. Wintermute had a hack before. Look, these guys are pretty bad at address generation. I'm not going to lie. Like, or, you know, it's a couple of like coincidences, but it's not great that like they're doing so many things with address generation, or that it's not a great look that they fucked it up twice, right? Because the other hack they had earlier this year, also address generation related. And when that one happened, they did pay out a white hat bounty. And I think something like 90% of the tokens eventually wound up back in their wallet. And they've offered to work out the same deal this time. So it's possible that the attacker is weighing their options. And they didn't want to like expose the, you know, the underlying assets to currency exchange risk. And so
that's probably the most likely outcome here.
Yeah.
Nice little white hat, not white hat, but just nice little repayment.
A nice bounty. Yeah. I mean, 160 million, you get 10% of that, 16 million. It's probably a pretty good payday. It's probably worth it to be free and clear rather than having 160 that you can't really touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the Wintermute hack. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Pretty solid. Piece of work by the attacker, you know?
Quick
160 mil.
Quick 160 mil. Yeah. Now they had to work hard to get it though, right? Like, I think the estimate is like you'd have to run thousands of GPUs for like weeks at a time or something constantly in order to like on average get one matching address for one of these things. So, you know, there's still a fair amount of entropy involved, but it makes it possible as opposed to impossible.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like very much a professionalized operation for sure. You know, who knows?
Hmm. Well, Wintermute will survive.
Yeah, unlike us.
All right. Let's see,
unlike
Matt,
us,
what else?
It's time for us to cover how we are not surviving one trade at a time.
Yeah, classic.
Let's jump into America's favorite
tech. Let's get into the FOMO of the week. All right, Matt, you go first.
My FOMO of the week this week, man, real throwback this one. My FOMO of the week is Ripple. So Ripple is up 30-40% this week on news that both Ripple and the SEC have issued like motions for the judge to just rule, right? They're basically saying is that neither of them thinks they need to go to court, right? Yeah. Like, they think that the judge has plenty of facts. They don't think they need to go through like more discovery or like, you know, a trial or whatever. They think that like this can be settled out of court. Given like that all the facts are like, I mean, this happened years ago, and like how many more facts could you possibly be collecting at this stage? Ripple, the lawsuit's super interesting. I'm not sure like how much you know, but I'll give you the very high level. So the very high level is that like during 2017 and like, you know, 16 a little bit, like the ICO bubble was happening, and Ripple, for whatever reason, is the only one to have been charged with selling securities, basically. And it, you know, in part, it's probably because they're easier to sue than someone like Socket or the DAO or whatever, right? It kind of is a centralized entity operating it. Also, like, it happened early enough that this is a little bit of like a vestige of the past, where like today, like, you're not going to sue Solana Labs. Right, you're not going to sue Ava Labs, you're not going to sue Polygon, right? We haven't seen those things happen. And so it feels almost like just a little bit like a case that like had like a little bit of overzealous prosecutors, you could say, at least from like the Ripple side, and that's how they would see it. And they just kind of got slapped because they're the first one out of the gate, you know, from years ago, as opposed to like last year or the year before, right? So Ripple pumping 50 cents, I think, in XRP. This is still down pretty badly from where I bought Ripple at $3. I bought tippity top of Ripple. I bought it at it the day of its all-time high, dude.
That's like, pretty solid. That's impressive.
I mean, I read the white paper and I was like, holy shit, this is brilliant. We can sacrifice a tiny bit of decentralization, add a little bit of trust, and it's going to be so efficient. Which is, you know, just like a narrative that we've never heard again. I don't know why. I don't know why Ripple's just been down only ever since. I got nothing.
Ripple's going to make a big comeback. I can see it. They're going to win the case for sure. They're going to settle or whatever's going to happen. And, you know, the great comeback begins. Although I don't think anybody actually uses it. I don't know.
The problem with Ripple is like, you can't sell it. think about how much it'll go down when you can legally sell it.
Oh, true. Or legally buy it.
Think about that. Nice little Ripple pump.
All right. Well, my FOMO of the week is your favorite asset in the whole world, Azuki. Azuki, man, I just keep missing on this just over and over and over. I don't know how many more times I can miss, but yeah, this week I think it went from like floor price of what, like 6.5, it went to a low of 6.5 ish, and then it pumped to like 12, 11.8, 11.9, 12, something like that. Now it's back down a little bit. Now it's like around the 10, 9.5, 10 range, but yeah, still missed a nice like 80-90% in the week.
Classic. I mean, okay. Question. Do you have any indication as to why it pumped?
I think it's anime season again. This Ranga, situation is really taking off. And then Ranga, I don't know, dude, some other project, these like Ranga boxes, got some like weird mint going on. So people are hyped about that. And then there's also the Digis, of course, Digi Daigaku. The most killer project, the free to own meta. This guy Gabe Layden, man, he's not missing. I think it's mostly those two variables. But I don't know. I'm not too high on Azuki long term. I think it's a decent play, but I could see.
Decent is all we can hope for, man. I mean, I bought Azuki like right when the great ape liquidation of 2022 happened.
That was a good buying spot.
Yeah, I mean, I basically bought the bottom. I think I got it at like 6.5, and at one point it went down to like 6.2. The problem was when I bought it, ETH was at like 1900, and it was like prime like merge season, you know, like merge pump season. And now it's at, you know, 1300. And so like after royalties, I'm like kind of barely up, I think.
Royalties. Never heard of it.
Okay. What else should we cover? You want to cover the stablecoin bill draft?
Absolutely not. No, that sounds horrible.
There's like a draft of a bill, which is like the intent to submit a bill for the first step on its way to maybe becoming a law someday.
Basically, this is just like trying to regulate algo stablecoins only, right?
Yep. I forget what they call it, like endogenous collateral or something. The rumor is that there's like a 2-year look back period where you get 2 years to comply or something. And so like everyone's just rushing to release their algo stables now. Take note, everyone, rush your algo stables now.
Find your most random underutilized L1 that still has some funding left and launch an algo stable on it now. This is not financial advice, career advice, any kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy just how much, like, you know, this reminds me of like last cycle, right? When like the rumor of a bill would like make people talk a lot, right? Mm-hmm. It would be like, you know, China FUD, right?
China
FUD. We had China FUD after China, but after China banned crypto, we still had China FUD. Mm-hmm. Like what? how much more could they do? This is the first step on something becoming law, is to be written. And I think it might not even be there yet. A draft of a bill.
I think this stuff is bound to happen at some point, man. Like the regulation on algo stables is going to happen on basically all stables. All stables that are not extremely compliant are going to go by the wayside. I think like Tether is the one.
You think that applies to Maker?
I think Maker takes on a different model in the future. I don't think it goes. I don't think it maintains the peg. I think Maker goes a completely different way. I think it's going to be tough for.
What?
Yeah. I think it's going to be tough to maintain like DAI as a like one-to-one dollar based like stable coin in the long term.
I mean, what else would it do?
So the reason is that I think it's already too kind of involved with things like USDC, right? So
I mean, isn't the whole point of USDC that it remains on the dollar denominated like stable value?
The point of USDC for sure. The point of Maker, I don't know. The point of Maker, I just think it'll be hard to like maintain that from a regulatory point of view, from just like also a usability point of view, right? Because people generally don't want to under-collateralize by that, or over-collateralize by that much. Like by that crazy extent. So I just think like Maker's roadmap in the future looks very different. It's like a cross collateral, like stable, that's not really like stable pegged, you know. I don't know. We should do a deep dive on Maker for sure.
We should absolutely do a deep dive on Maker. I completely agree. In fact, I think we should do it this week.
We should do it tomorrow.
Can I give a hot take on fucking DeFi right now?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Sorry, basically this entire episode, folks, has just been Gron dealing with talking about shit that like interests him in no way. But here's my fucking hot take on DeFi. You get a lot of people. Sorry, you said the word under-collateralized, and like, I just don't understand what people are thinking. So people will say something like, "People love DeFi. CeFi broke. DeFi didn't break. DeFi's here for the long run," right? Like, you know, and they're referring to Celsius and BlockFi and all that, right? Like, CeFi broke. DeFi is more resilient. DeFi's here to stay. Everyone wants to get on DeFi, right, as a result, right? There's a narrative I hear a lot, is that, like, DeFi is more reliable, therefore everyone wants to shift away from CeFi and into DeFi. And then in the next breath, they will say something about under-collateralized lending on DeFi. And it's like, why do you think DeFi didn't break? Do you have your blinders on that heavily that you're going to tell me that DeFi is attractive because it didn't break, and therefore everyone's going to go into DeFi, and the most promising thing in DeFi right now is under collateralizing? Are you serious? I'll say it again. Why do you think DeFi didn't break? Mm-hmm. Like, are you paying attention? Of course it didn't break because it was over-collateralized, heavily over-collateralized. Yeah. That's what it's supposed to be doing. Like, that's really important. I cannot, for the life of me, see a future where under-collateralized lending becomes anywhere close to the norm on DeFi. And if you look at, like, the models we have today, it's something like Clearpool, right? Where, like, you're lending stables. So I don't know if you've heard of this. It's kind of an interesting model. You can, like, market makers will sign up and you can lend them USDC uncollateralized. But market makers can blow up. I mean, look at what right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Shit happens, right? Like, market making is not a risk-free business here.
There's a future, right, where you can have this kind of, like, on-chain, you know, like, on-chain based, like, lending protocol, right, where it's like, you know, you get something similar to a credit score based on your history of on-chain activity. You know, if you've taken out like massive loans that are way over collateralized, like, okay, maybe your collateralization ratio goes down a little bit and a little bit and a little bit to the point where it's maybe 1-to-1, and then eventually you get to an under collateralized kind of point if you're that kind of client or whatever, if you have that kind of on-chain history, right? You could see that kind of future getting there in DeFi over many years, right, in the future. But we're nowhere near there. And like you said, the reason that it works now is because it is a very safe kind of model at this point.
So you're saying we need more risk in crypto?
I'm not saying we need more risk. I'm just saying that conceivably, when people talk about, like, you know, under collateralization needing to exist in DeFi, like, I could see a future in which you have, like, just using the tools at our disposal now without having to go off chain, without having to bring these, like, centralized parties involved, you could get to a more, you know, kind of something that's more at par with what exists now in the traditional financial markets. But yeah, I don't think that's anywhere near reality.
I have, like, strong pushback on that point, mm-hmm. which is that in if you think about the typical, like, the current world that exists today and mm-hmm. how those models work, mm-hmm. A large part of them revolves around this notion of, like a strong justice system that exists outside of, you know, crypto, right? Where, like, if I take out a loan from a credit card company and I don't pay it off, eventually they come and repossess my stuff. Right. Eventually, like, I'm forced to declare bankruptcy. I can't get more credit. Right. With, and then moreover, if I lose my credit card, I call to cancel it immediately. Right. In crypto, those things don't exist. Right. So first of all, like, yeah, say you build, like, an on-chain, what do you call it? Reputation. If your private key ever gets, like, accessed, like, yeah, by someone that, like, isn't actually you, you have no recourse, and neither does anyone who lent you any money. And there, you have no recourse on chain, and you have no recourse off chain because you don't know who that person is, right? To me, it's just a world that, like, exists in theory. But, like, and look, I generally feel this way about on chain identity, right? It's like, until the off chain world has the systems in place to genuinely, like, issue on-chain identity in a way that, like, identity theft can also be dealt with, we're not going to see any of this, right? Like, I can see a world where you have under-collateralized on-chain lending where it's like, I get a credit card and it takes the form of a smart contract where I get USDC, right? Instead of just a credit card where I get USD, right? And then if I don't pay it back, they come and repossess my stuff in the real world because it is, like, linked to my identity. But in order for that to even work, right, we're going to need, like, ways that I can call my credit card company and cancel it, right? Like, we're going to need, like, I saw a paper yesterday on Twitter. Someone's like, me and some Stanford researchers looked into reversible Ethereum transactions.
I saw that. Yeah.
I'm like, are you serious right now? Yeah, like, right. What is the point? Right? Like, if it's reversible and it's not, like, if it's reversible, it kind of defeats the purpose of, like, a permissionless, like, blockchain. Right? Like,
Here's the thing. So my thing is that I agree with you. This is a world that exists only in theory, and, like, only in theory. And like, I can't state that strongly enough, or, like, the stuff I'm talking about, absolutely, even the building blocks for it don't exist right now. Like, it's going to take many years. It's going to take first, like, a lot of people to first want this, then a lot of infrastructure to get built, and then, like, a lot more people to be on the network so that there is this kind of, like, social layer to build on top of, and then, like, the applications can come, right? So, like, it's a long way away, but I'm just saying, like, conceivably, that's the way that it could get there. What I think could happen is a different kind of model, because what you're really looking at with all of these things is creditworthiness, right? Like, if somebody doesn't pay you back, like, you want, right? Like, there is legal recourse, right? There's legal recourse for many people, but, like, for the most trusted parties, right? The legal system is still there, but it's an absolute like backup. Like you know, with the most, if you're dealing with like the most trusted counterparties you have, right? Like big institutions, like you're not really, the legal system is there and you feel comfortable that it's there, but like you're dealing with trusted parties. So like if you look at this creditworthiness thing, right? Like I think the model that I could see is like this, like reputation kind of like fabric, like however it comes about, whether it's like something like Lens Protocol, whether like distributing different kinds of NFTs that like add to your social score or whatever. But like basically you could implement some kind of slashing model, right? Like similar to proof of stake, where it's like, you know, you're not staking all of your assets like ETH, but you're basically, you're like collateralizing your like reputation score in a certain way. And that's like being used across, you know, all different parts of the ecosystem, right? Like you can get, you know, you're, I don't know, like none of this stuff exists. Like I'm just thinking out loud here, but I think, yeah, you can build this kind of stuff. Like, I don't think these are like unsolvable problems.
I think they're intractable. I think that like, if your no matter how good your reputation is or whatever, like if you like lose your private key, like that's it. Right. And then everyone else like that lending you anything is SOL and you're SOL.
Yeah, I mean like, okay, dude, like private key loss has been a thing forever, right? Like you have multi-sigs, like you have, there's a lot of solutions to not like losing your private key.
I mean, what if you misplace your private key? Right, like then you lose your reputation.
You have multi-sigs though. Like you don't need to like.
Or like if someone gets access, right? Like this is the issue is that like there's a separate thing that can happen here where in the real world we have a social layer to deal with things like identity theft, and in the crypto world we don't have that, and like almost definitionally can't have that because of the permissionless nature of the systems.
Mm-hmm.
To me, like the issue is that like, look, also you can build, if you're building a reputation through, like it's very easy to mess with algos, right? Like everyone knows the right way to like build your credit score in the real world, right? Like there's all these tips, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as it becomes algorithmically defined, bad actors are going to find the cheapest way possible to replicate that and like take the money and run. As soon as something becomes under collateralized, you like, it's the same issue with proof of stake. Like why does the market cap of ETH have to be high for proof of stake to work on ETH? It's because people need to face more downside from forking the network than they would get upside from like shorting it and then forking it. Right. It's the same thing here. Like as soon as like your collateral, it's the, you know, if your collateralization ratio goes below 1:1, as soon as you become under collateralized, like the incentive.
Okay, but dude, the idea here is not like
is to take the money and run.
Yeah, yeah, obviously it is, but it's not like, okay, if you're a protocol, you can like layer this stuff in. It's not just like, okay, any like rando off the street is just going to be able to take $1 million uncollateralized loan. It's like, if you have a 10-year reputation of like good on-chain behavior, it's just like a credit score. Like how is it any different than having a credit score and taking a loan, you know?
Because when like, you take a loan in the off-chain fiat world, there is recourse there.
I do get that. I do get that. But it's like, just think about how, I think like, a lot of this is like very hypothetical in the sense that like most things don't go to like legal arbitration, you know, like legal system is in place for a reason, but it's like, you can build risk models where like, sure. Like, yeah, you lose some money, but like, you're still going to protect yourself pretty well without any kind of like legal recourse. I think like that's very much possible.
I mean, forgetting legal recourse though, right? Like it's literally just like someone can show up to repossess your jet if you like bought it with like borrowed money that like you can't pay back now. Like your company can go bankrupt, right? And like you have to pay back like your creditors, right? In the crypto world, like it, you know, we don't have that, right? And it's hard to imagine. Like, yeah, I mean, I think that system might work, but I think with a fully on-chain version of the world, it's never going to work that way because there is no creditor, you know, there is no way to make sure the creditors get paid back. There is no way to make sure that like assets get repossessed.
That's where the risk model comes in. Like, you have to write a risk model that's like going to account for that. And like, that's where I think the free market will find a solution. Like, I think over time.
Okay, so here's my thing. The free market has found a solution. The free market is telling you right now that over collateralization is the solution.
Well, that's the solution given
that. Without knowing you, without being able to like forgetting even knowing you and credit worthy.
Okay, I think that's only true given the state of the tech right now. Like I said, like, the infrastructure doesn't exist, the social fabric doesn't exist, and the applications don't exist. Like, the developers aren't there. So once those things get in, like, you know, fall into place, you could have that world.
I mean, doesn't that look like centralized parties, though? Like, if you think about the points that would need to exist along the way, for example, like, I'm comfortable lending Apple money, right? Today, the way that I can do that is through a bond, right? But in the future, there might be a way that I can, say, lend Apple money through, like, on-chain, right, permissionlessly. But in order to verify that that's actually Apple, you need this centralized party, like a Clearpool, to sit in the middle here, right? Like, if you're going to have on-chain, my issue is that if you're going to have
on-chain, I think that's a whole different argument. I don't think that's an unsolvable problem. I think it's very easy to create a contract or a protocol that's like, I want to lend money to somebody that's creditworthy enough to the point of Apple, where they have an on-chain credit score that's like over 800 or whatever. And the protocol will only lend money to people like that on your behalf.
The challenge that I have is that, like, if you don't tie that on-chain identity to an off-chain entity, then like, any bad actor can just run.
Yeah, but the bad actor, like, you have to write a risk model that's going to account for that bad actor. Like, somebody who's, like, had an on-chain history of rugging in the past is not going to have the same access to somebody who's, like, I don't know. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. If you really think, like, reputation on-chain, like, here's the thing. The reputation on-chain has to be valuable enough for you to not just throw it away, right? Like, if you have, here's the thing. Like, you would basically, first of all, like, you have to, it's going to be a very slow thing. Like, you're not just going to give out, like, millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And that's the thing. Once that happens one time, if you run away with the money, you're a bad actor forever on-chain, right? And then you need to build a system where it would take you years and years to build up the same reputation on chain to get to that level of access again.
Right. So, but the issue is that, like, the bad actors would just spin up as many addresses as possible, as soon as possible, taking out small loans at first and taking out medium sized loans. Right. And then rugging and repeating one by one. Right. Like, so you have this, like, army of addresses that's going to exploit something like this.
We're just, like, kind of thinking about different worlds here. I'm living in a world where, like, you actually have proper reputation modeling on chain. You wouldn't just be able to rug every time. Maybe I'm just an optimist.
Look, so am I, right? I think that without, like, an actual link to, like, your off-chain identity, like, that's not possible.
We'll see.
To me, it's fully intractable. So things like Optimism DAO, we're running this episode like we do everyone. Like, the Optimism DAO has this notion of, like, having, like, a soulbound NFT that, like, uniquely identifies each human or something. And, like, literally the only solution I can see for this is WorldCoin with the orb, where they scan your retina. And, like, that becomes your on-chain ID. Mm. Like, that, if you do that, okay, yeah, sure.
This is like 5 to 10 years down the line. We're just going on tangents now.
5 to 10, like 100.
All right. Okay. I think that's a good place for us to wrap it.
That was the week in review.
That was the week. We will be back later on this week with a deep dive on, I don't know, maybe Maker. We'll see you then. Have a good week, everybody. Till then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.